Gates.
Mystery.
Monsters.
Mayhem.
Just the tea with balls.
Ah, you know how I feel about balls.
You love hot dogs and balls.
Yeah. Not necessarily at the same time, because I don't like baseball. You know?
Somebody sent me a video of a hot dog farm.
Was it Andrew?
Yes.
Yeah, he sends me... I get at least three hot dog memes a day.
He sent it to
And not just from him.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Many a people.
That means your reputation precedes you.
I have a hot dog tattoo.
Yeah, I know. He sent that to me. And
yeah.
I thought it was funny. And honestly, if there was a hot dog farm that grew hot dogs, I'd love to eat a hot dog plucked off of a tree or grown out of a ground.
Yeah.
But I told him to send that to you.
It was like a trailer park Willy Wonka.
Yeah, that'd be great. I like that there could be different Willy Wonkas in the world. There's the white trash Willy Wonka who grows hot dogs.
Yeah.
My brother is turning out to be the conservative Ohio Willy Wonka of...
Of nuts.
Nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And ice cream and lemonade shake-ups.
So basically just kind of like a whole fair kind of thing going.
Yeah.
He'll get into corn dogs soon.
Oh, he will.
God, I would love one.
If he did that, I know you'll drive out there to get one.
Of course I would.
I'll go with you.
Okay. It is occurring to me now that chewing on the tapioca balls is going to just be a fucking nightmare for editing.
Guess what? It's no different than me going...
Yeah, but I edit all those.
I know.
I can't edit the... Big fat lady. I can't just edit.
I try to sneak him in. By the way.
Oh, do you?
I do.
It makes so much work for me.
I try to sneak those in, and I also try to sneak in a burp.
So much work. I hope for the day when I can just record an episode and just put it up.
You know, this is a dumb podcast, right? There is no need to do that much work.
We're dumb painters, and yet we put all of our time and effort into everything we do out there. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, Walter.
Exactly.
You're not wrong, Walter.
Thank you.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah, I need my phone out, too, because I also have some notes.
You're ready to embark on a journey?
I guess so.
Also, welcome to the show, everybody. This is M3 with E5. I'm your host, Epion 5. It's Mystery, Monsters, and Mayhem. And joining me, as always, is Brian, Episode Pro.
I'm here to...
And I always ask,
yeah.
I know how you're doing, but why don't you tell the audience... How you're doing?
Do you know how I'm doing? We kind of keep to ourselves pretty.
I can see
well.
How you're doing.
Overworked, underpaid, and stressed.
Based on how you walk through the house.
Well, I'm usually just in a lot of pain.
Yes, but like, I guess
I feel like I walk through the house the same way you do. I just kind of like shambling and uttering curse words under my breath.
But you have moments of intense shambling.
Oh, sure.
So, like, if you come home from work and, like, it's not been a great day, you're shambling pretty quick.
I'm a little huffy when I get angry.
Yeah, and I can tell that. You don't have to say it.
No,
because I can see it.
Oh, thanks, bud. Yeah, and do you put it on your calendar there?
I put it on my wish board. Wish board to make Brian's life better.
Yeah, it's fine.
Because if you wish it, dude.
If you will it, dude,
thank you
will achieve. Yeah,
ah,
yeah.
Fuck off.
That's fine. Yeah, I'm fine. How you doing, bud?
I'm kind of excited for this episode.
I'm kind of ahead of the curve for this Raleigh
show. You ready to
show.
Go for a show.
I mean, I still got to cut 4 stencils, which is not bad.
No,
it was 9.
Yeah.
Paint 5, package them. Got to wrap all that stuff, and then I'm home free.
But you're like the Henry Ford of making artwork in the garage, more so than me, because I can only do a few pieces a day, but you'll do...
Oh, I do it assembly style.
Yeah,
like I have like a flow chart. Like day 1, prep. Day 2, painting. Day 3, packaging.
No
day
way.
Day 4.
No way.
Yeah.
I like to wing it.
Nah, bat wing it.
I like to live dangerously.
Yeah, that's true.
On
that's
the edge.
True. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you had, just like you ate some like broccoli today?
No, actually, I had toast today.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I am drinking a delicious Hams, and it's made from the land of sky blue waters.
You are aggressively white.
I am aggressively white and Midwest.
But not an aggressive white.
No, that's right.
Two different things.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay.
I would classify you as okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I am excited for this episode because it's kind of gory. We'll just get the trigger warnings out. It's kind of gory.
Has this been on your list for a while?
No, actually, this was not on my list ever.
Oh, this one just kind of, you just saw the date approaching and it just kind of popped into your head?
You could say that. It wasn't like a last minute, like, shit, I'm running out of ideas. No, it wasn't on my list of episodes to do, but, and I get into why I decided to do this episode, it is a topic that I have actually talked to other people about.
Just like, at the post office?
not yet.
Okay.
Who knows? Give it time.
Yeah.
And I decided, you know what, it kind of falls into the parameter of a mystery, perhaps, but it is also a bit mayhem as well.
There's definitely mayhem.
Yeah.
And over here, I got a monster for you.
Yeah, I know. I know you do. I know. Yes. Real life monster.
It's a triple M.
I guess it would be a triple M.
Yeah.
This is a triple M episode. It is a mystery. It is a monster. It is a mayhem.
In last podcast parlance, would we call that a gold star?
Oh, I think it would depend.
Because, I mean, they call it just if it's, like, a super gory, like,
right. I think it depends on how much detail you and I get into.
I don't have that much, actually. I didn't want to.
It was
sad.
It is very sad.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a gold star episode, but I think this will be an eye-opener for some people.
Mm.
Because I think...
See what you did there.
You know, it's funny. We've actually been working up to this episode for the past 2 years with our little jokes about a certain director, which we'll talk about later.
This is our Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, so. I hope the payoff is just as nice. Actually, it'd probably be better, because I don't really care about the Marvel shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'll get into it. Are you ready?
Please.
Let's do it. All right. In the wee hours.
Oh.
Wee hours.
Yeah.
Of a dark summer night, June 29th, 1967. Ooh. A 1966 Buick Electra 225.
Oh.
That's a name for a car.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took me two sentences and I'm already caught up.
That Buick, it was a hefty car of steel and polished chrome, traveling an estimated 60 to 80 miles per hour down Highway 90, headed towards New Orleans. Its passengers... three adults in the front, three children all asleep in the back, and four chihuahuas. Driving the car was 20-year-old Ronald Harrison. He was a chauffeur on this dark evening for attorney Sam Brody and his partner.
Chauffeur?
Chauffeur.
I hardly knew her.
Ah. little Tandy time.
Yes. Sorry. Go on.
He was the also attorney Sam Brody. And the third person, the third adult, the partner, the famous actress Jane Mansfield.
Fuck, I had a prime opportunity. Chauffeur, I damn near killed her.
Ah. More Tandy time.
Yeah.
Now, unbeknownst to them.
Because he did.
That's right. I know.
Spoil it for you.
Spoiler. unbeknownst to them, a Johnson Motor tractor trailer driving ahead of them had slowed down from driving 50 miles an hour to a slow and steady 35 as the result of a mosquito. What's so funny? What are you laughing at?
My brain is completely broken and corrupted, and you said Johnson, and I thought about hot dogs. So I thought it was a tractor carrying a bunch of hot dogs.
You know what? If that were the case, I might have survived.
And then my brain was like, why would a tractor be hauling that many hot dogs?
Well, there's hot dog tractors.
You wouldn't need to do that.
People eat a lot of hot dogs.
This time of night?
You never know.
Weird.
Oh, it's cooler at night. Keeps those dogs fresh.
I can't believe that it's true. It's like Star Wars. Everything they said is true.
Is hot dogs like your Star Wars to like where everything reminds me of Star Wars? Everything's like wrestling and hot dogs with you?
Mostly wrestling.
Okay.
But you can buy a hot dog while watching wrestling.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, God, I'm I'm dead.
Well,
I'm broken.
Yeah, that Johnson motor tractor trailer.
Not Johnsonville.
No, just Johnson.
That's a good brat, man.
Johnson Lebowski.
Yeah.
Yes. Was driving. It slowed down to 35
I'm
miles
ruining
an
your
hour.
Opening.
No, it doesn't matter.
Sorry, Sean.
It's okay. but it slowed down because a mosquito fog had accumulated in that area from a passing truck that had sprayed the insecticide.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. At 2:25 a.m., the speeding Buick carrying the three adults, the three children, and the four Mansfield Chihuahuas slammed into the back of the slow-moving tractor trailer. The car, in the blink of an eye, went under the back of the trailer, resulting in the roof of the Buick being sheared off like a fragile tin can. The three adults seated in the front were killed instantly. The three children, all asleep in the back, survived with minimal injuries. And the four Chihuahuas, sadly, they also passed away.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it sucks.
That's the real tragedy.
You know, anytime I watch a movie, don't care if I see people, like, murdered, brutalized, killed. Even if it's a fake puppet animal, I'm like,
yeah.
I don't want to watch it. I love that puppet animal.
I'm pretty indifferent.
Yeah. Now, as it is with most cases, tragedy often leads to innovations within safety.
Yeah.
It's true. Prior to the untimely death of Jane Mansfield, semi-trucks that pulled tractor trailers did not have to have a safety bar that extended downward from the back of the trailer. However, after this horrific accident, it was required by the National Highway Safety Administration that all semi-trucks have an underside guard installed on the back of their tractor trailer. This safety bar is referenced to by many as...
I don't know.
Mansfield bar. That's what they actually call it. They call it the Mansfield bar.
Huh.
It's kind of weird to think that, you know, anytime you're driving, you see a semi truck, you see the bar that hangs down. It's a pretty new addition in regards to
weird.
Yeah, I mean this happened in '67.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was just a few years before I was born.
Wow, you're so fucking old.
I am old. Yeah. Now, a common misconception about Jane Mansfield is that during the accident, she was decapitated as her car slid under the backside of the tractor trailer. This is false.
So our conversation we had recently about Jane Mansfield, that's kind of what put this in, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That we talk like... about the death of Jane Mansfield a lot in this house.
That and then the director we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
But she was not decapitated. She died instantaneously from massive blunt force head trauma. The urban myth most likely developed from the accident photos, which showed a swatch of what appears to be blonde hair within the wreckage.
Oh.
Now this, and I don't recommend looking at the photos.
I'm doing it now.
Okay. This patch, because in some
I'm
of them,
do it.
Yeah, don't. In some of them, you can see the Chihuahuas, and that's like, no.
Oh, that's fine. Those are like little Cornish game
hens. I don't see it. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. This patch of hair, it could have been one of two things. Mansfield was known to have quite a collection of wigs, so it stands within reason that it was simply one of her wigs because she was traveling to a gig.
Right.
On the other end of the gruesome spectrum, it could very well have been the top of her scalp.
It's pretty fucking gnarly.
Yeah. Now, the reason I bring up Jane Mansfield is that the human body fascinates me.
Mm.
It is an oxymoron unto itself. On one hand, the human body is extremely resilient. Take, for example, the case of Julianne Kopke. In 1971... a 17-year-old Julianne was traveling in a plane over the Amazonian rainforest when her plane was struck by lightning.
Nah, this is why a man was not meant to fly.
Yeah.
Stay on the ground.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, planes get struck by lightning all the time, but in this case, the plane disintegrated in midair.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Disintegrated?
Disintegrated in
midair. I don't know
mid-air.
If that's the right word.
Yeah.
It just turned into dust?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know about them apples, Will.
And Julianne, still trapped in her seat, fell 10,000 feet, about 2 miles.
That's like a Looney Tunes logic.
Yeah, no, it is. It plays out like a Looney Tunes episode.
All right.
She fell 10,000 feet, 2 miles, crashing into the jungle below. She survived.
Mm.
And trekked for 11 days alone in the jungle until she found some help.
I just want to say it right now for when I edit this, probably tomorrow. There's going to be an undercurrent of Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses under this.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, do it.
Okay.
On the fragile end of it all. Oh, and I should say, there was a made-for-TV movie about that whole incident.
Oh.
And she's still alive today. She's like, I think 60-something she went on to. Her mother was also on the plane. And as far as I know, I think Julianne was the only one to survive. Everybody else died.
Oh.
There were other survivors that had also fell and crashed.
Yeah.
They starved to death because they were not found in time.
Oh.
Julianne was able to find help because she knew that if you find a stream, follow it downstream.
Yeah,
and that's what she did.
But I know the topic of. Did you even tell them what the topic is yet?
Not
or are we
yet.
Still working?
We're getting
on
up to it. Yeah.
I don't know how you're going to get there from this.
Yeah, I'll get there. And even if it's a dumb way to get there, I don't care. My podcast, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
When she fell, was she still in the seat?
She was still strapped in the seat. They theorized that the way she survived was that because there was a storm, they think that there could have been an updraft, which slowed her descent.
Sure.
Also, falling through the canopy of the jungle slowed her descent.
Yeah.
And maybe the seat absorb some of the impact.
Because what was that horror movie that was like from like the 80s that was basically Final Destination but wasn't? You remember that one?
I do. I don't remember the title of it.
Because I think that was inspired by this.
It was.
Right?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, regardless of
that movie ruled, by the way. I'm going to look that up real quick.
Regardless of those factors, she still fell 2 miles, a free fall.
Some people pay good money for that.
And survived.
Yeah.
I think she only had a small laceration on her arm.
Ooh.
And a broken collarbone.
Yeah. And then she looks around and there's just bodies everywhere.
And then she walked for 11 days.
That's crap. Nah.
It's nuts.
That's the real tragedy.
Now.
Double D's nuts.
Double D's nuts. That's right.
Yes.
On the fragile end of it all, a friend of a friend recently passed away. Now, I did not know this person. What I was told was that he was 31, healthy. He was out walking. He just tripped on a rock, just stumbled, took a slight fall, bumped his head, and died instantly.
Wow.
That's all it took.
Yeah.
So, the human body is...
The juxtaposition of 2 miles out of the fucking sky. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. The body is a complex, confusing machine of muscle, bone, and sinew. It's my opinion, it's very much like the Rupert's Drop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's if you don't know, the Rupert's Drop is a glass-shaped teardrop that is...
kind of looks like a butt plug.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like a clear butt plug, but... Due to how it's heated and cooled.
This is why I'm on this show.
Yeah.
I weave a magical tapestry of words.
Yeah, you provide a good perspective for people
it's
to
It's a clear
get
butt
in,
plug.
You know? Yeah, it's a clear
Y'all
butt
have seen a butt plug.
Yeah, it's called the Rupert's Drop. But the funny thing about the Rupert's Drop is...
Soul Survivor. Was that the name of that movie?
I think so. It sounds familiar. So.
Yeah.
If you take a hammer and smash the rounded end of the Rupert drop, it's indestructible. It will not break.
I'm pretty strong. I could do it.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen plenty of videos where people
I'm just taking fucking sledgehammers
and nothing. Cannot break it. However, if you barely touch the thin end of the Rupert's drop, the entire thing will instantly shatter into an explosion of shards. That's kind of like the human body is.
Yeah, you know? It's like when a girl talks to me.
What?
Yeah.
You shatter?
I don't know what to do. And then I just vomited all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
A lot of hot dogs.
Oh. That's a smell I don't want to be around.
Well, they smell about the same. Go.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming out.
Now, Jane Mansfield. May
oh,
have,
yeah.
We're going back. Going around. Going back.
Jane Mansfield.
Janje.
Yes.
Janje Mansfield?
Yeah.
That's a Swedish
that
version.
That was Swedish, yeah.
Yeah. She may have suffered a traumatic head injury that resulted in instant death, but, what would happen if a human head was cleanly and quickly severed?
Just cleaved.
Cleaved from the body with no trauma to the brain. Could a person survive? Could... They retain consciousness and identity after the fatal and clean blow has been dealt, even for just a few seconds. Well, that, my friends, is the topic of today's episode of M3 with E5. We're talking about decapitation, or otherwise known as, what am I doing in this bucket?
What? No! Oh,
sip,
man.
Sip my hams.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, okay. No. And you did some extensive research about...
Read a lot about decapitation these past okay. week.
All right, and the post-cleaving consciousness?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I read a lot. Yeah. And I'm only going to talk about three cases of decapitation, but there were a lot.
Yeah.
And
you were like, oh, there's so many. How am I going to weed out all right? of these?
I decided to talk about historical ones more or less, because there was a lot of just anonymous persons
sure,
that were
sure,
executed.
Sure. Joe Schmo over here getting exactly. his head cleaved off.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about two historical ones and a third one that's kind of like the clincher for this whole basis of is there consciousness.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Let's dive into the gore. It's actually not that gory. Regarding the... That's a tough one. Regarding... the decapitation of a human head.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss a few cases of those who have met their demise under the blade of the guillotine. So, I always like to do a little history lesson. What is the guillotine? Where does it
guillotine,
come from?
Guillotine.
I say guillotine, but it depends on how French you want to be.
I think I want to be a little French.
You want to be a little French?
Croissant.
Oh! Look at this boy over here.
But at the same time, I think I worked, you know, at a grocery store, and if people say croissant, fuck them.
Yeah.
Those are assholes.
Yeah?
I get it. All you right. went. You went, you had some bread.
Yeah.
Get over yourself.
Brot?
No. Croissant. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
Guillotine?
Guillotine is just how I've always known how to say it. I've never thought of saying
it's fun to say
guillotine.
It. I mean, I love a good accent. And I love to say a guillotine.
Yeah.
I'll just say that's from now on, guillotine.
You don't need to, okay. Ovaltine.
Ovaltine.
yeah.
Let's talk about it. His history. Yeah. Where does it come from?
Where does it go?
How does that gosh darn thing work?
Yeah.
Oh, in short, the guillotine.
Mostly.
Now I'm saying guillotine.
Mostly gravity.
It is actually gravity. It's a pretty simple design. The guillotine is a tall, upright wooden frame that has a large, weighted, angled blade that is suspended at the top of the frame.
Yeah.
Now, at the bottom, directly underneath the blade, is essentially a wooden stock meant to hold a person's head and neck in place. When a lever is pulled, the weighted blade quickly...
A lever?
Yeah, a lever. Oh. They, like, pull a lever.
I always thought it was just like, you just let go of a rope.
Well, the blade has to click in place. There is like a mechanism that holds the blade, so you do have to detach it. So there's like a lever or a lever.
We should build one.
You can. Like, you can look at plans online.
I can do anything I want. I'm a grown-ass man.
You're an American.
I'm going to build a guillotine and put it in my backyard.
Okay.
Next to the pull-up bar.
The pull-up bar.
That's true. There's a pull-up bar out there.
I know. I've seen it.
I've used it twice.
I was just going to say, it hasn't been used in
That's
a while.
John. John did that.
Okay.
But sometimes when I'm like mowing the yard, I'll just pull one it. There it is. Okay. And then go about my business.
Look at you. Got it. You scamp.
Uh-huh.
He's a little scamp. Yeah. A little scamp.
Getting some weight training. Cardio in.
Oh, gotta get
full
that
body.
Gotta get that cardio up in
full
there.
Body.
Yeah. Full body card. So essentially, when the lever is pulled, the weighted blade quickly falls, as you mentioned, gravity.
Yeah.
And due to not only the weight of the blade, but the fact that it is angled, it quickly cuts through a person's neck, instantly and cleanly detaching the head, which then falls into a bucket or a receptacle.
Or just on the ground.
Well, there is a reason they like to use a receptacle.
Mm.
Because if not...
Oh, like a good Longenburger basket.
It just rolls away.
Oh, I love a good... You know who loves a good Longenburger basket?
I don't know. You who tell
Something
me.
That's nice wicker.
Oh, a good
wicker basket?
Oh,
you
go basket?
Down to the Pier 1, you get yourself a nice Longenburger basket.
Wait, you go
oh,
to
I'm
Pier
talking
one?
About a Barb Novak.
I thought Barb liked to go to Bed Bath & Beyond for that one.
The wicker's part of the Beyond.
They oh, the wicker?
You, they don't
okay.
tell you that there.
You know what I heard
you
about?
You can put it in the bed, you can put it in the bath, or you can put it in your car. That's beyond.
It's true. And you know, I heard, speaking about cars, I just heard that Barb Nova, you know what she's driving this time?
What's that?
She's driving a 1998 Pontiac Bonneville.
Oh, a Bonneville.
She drives a Bonneville. That's right.
Barb Novak's in a Bonneville.
Yeah, the Bonneville. The Pontiac. That's a 98. You know what it's got?
What?
Got a tape deck.
Yeah.
It's got a CD player.
It's got those windows. It's got the cranky windows.
It's got the crank windows,
It's got the cranky windows.
Yeah, you don't trust the electronic windows because those break down on you. What are you going to do then, you know?
I never had one of them. Yeah. I've never had a breakdown before.
You've never had a Bonneville?
No, I've never. Well, I mean, everybody's.
You should get a Bonneville.
Everybody's dipped a toe in a Bonneville. Let's Come on, that's America's car,
it's
baby.
It is America's car. That's America's Wisconsin's car right there.
That's America's car right there.
That is the car of cheese. It's the car of Wisconsin. It's the car of Barb Novak. And it's a car for a wicker biscuit.
Yeah.
And a hams.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, anywho, no good segue out of that into decapitations.
No, let's just jump right back in. Okay. Yeah, I got no joke.
Yeah, all right. I got to really stop talking to you so much.
No, I like it. But anyway,
No, I mean, not just on the podcast, just in general.
Oh, okay.
Because we do Barb Novak's off mic, too.
Sickening and disgusting in this house.
It's
but
just a fun accent.
It is a fun accent. Yeah. And it's not that far off from where I grew up and all the shit I heard as a child. I'm doing it.
Yeah, you are.
Gotta stop.
Yeah.
But when the blade falls, it just cuts right through a person's head instantly. And then the head pops into a basket.
Wicker basket.
Otherwise, it will roll away. Which could be kind of fun. I don't know. Who knows? Now, the guillotine has been in use for hundreds of years, with France being the main country that really got its mileage out of that angled blade.
We are from France. Sorry.
That one's going to get lost on the youth. No one's going to know what that is.
Oh.
It's Coneheads.
It is.
Prior to France's abolition of...
Abolishment?
Of abolition.
Abolition.
Of capitable. Fuck!
What do you do? You're the one that writes it.
I know. I spell it right.
And you even go out there and
you
whisper it to yourself when you're reading it out there.
I spelled this fucking word right. Capitable.
Capital punishment?
Capital.
Yeah.
Punishment.
Yeah.
I can say it if I say capital.
Capital.
Capital punishment. Anyway,
yes.
France, they got rid of
France, they
capital,
hate the capital punishment.
Punishment in 1981. That's when they were like,
1981?
Fuck it. 1981. Yes, 1981.
Wow.
With that being said,
the
last government-sanctioned execution that we know of, I always have to say that, through the use of the guillotine, would you like to guess when this was?
Oh, geez. 81.
You're not far off.
77.
Yes, you're right.
Fucking nailed it. First try. Because I can edit out 81.
Yeah. September 10th, 1977. Which is crazy. Star Wars came out before the last public beheading in France.
Yeah.
Now, that public beheading actually is on YouTube.
Wow.
You can watch it.
Hmm.
Now, you're far away that you don't see any gore, but you could, they show them putting the guy laying down. He was a convicted serial murderer.
Hmm.
They show him walking him up. They lay him down on the bench. You can see them put the stock over his head. And as soon as they put that stock over his head, they pull the lever and he is done.
Wow.
And then they just push his body into a coffin.
That's crazy.
On a weird side note, Christopher Lee was at that execution.
Of course he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when and how did it all start? Well, throughout all of history, man has been executing others through various means that are largely painful and torturous. There have always been beheadings, but prior to the guillotine, such acts were carried out with an axe and sword. Sword. Yes, I like to emphasize the W. All right? Kill me. More often than not, it took a few whacks on the part of the executioner to get the job done.
Sure.
Now, let's not forget the other means
of death. That dulls your blade, too.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, that bone's hard to get through.
Yeah.
It actually is.
It is.
The breaking wheel. These are just other implements.
Yeah, I've seen Witchfinder General.
Yeah, the breaking wheel.
Yeah.
The Iron Maiden being drawn and quartered, hanging from a lamppost, just being hung until you stop breathing, burned at the stake, and in some cases, simply being slowly strangled to death. Now, I hope
marriage.
Ah! What you did there. So more than 50% of marriages.
Yeah.
They don't work out.
Higher. I think it's higher.
Yeah, it is higher. I think it's 60-something, 66. Yeah, anyway, I hope you get the point.
Yeah.
Executions were painful, torturous, time-consuming acts that resulted in much pain and suffering on the part of those who were condemned to die.
Man, the hangman's got to get paid, too.
It was a job.
Hangman's got a job.
Yes. Now, on the 10th of October, 1789, Joseph Ignace Guillotine proposed to the French Assembly that capital
punishment.
Thank you. Yes. And I said when I wrote capital punishment should be in the form of a beheading that is, quote, by the means of a simple mechanism, end quote.
What?
I didn't want to do it.
That's your French?
Yes, that is my French. Okay. You can't go wrong with Matt Berry.
No, that's fair. And that's fair.
I can't do the French.
I always like to if
they're... Wait, I can do French.
Okay.
By the means of a simple mechanism.
Well, that's not bad.
Not bad.
That's okay. Not bad.
Yeah, and it wasn't too weird.
Whenever it's like an exotic kind of, I like to just do a deep Southern accent.
Yeah.
You know?
You can't go wrong
even though
with
if
that.
It is French,
it doesn't matter.
It's funny every time.
That's how I feel about Matt Berry.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say that this form of capital punishment should be streamlined, efficient, quick, and as painless as possible. And, in an interesting perspective, this form of execution should be the only means of punishment carried out on all the condemned, regardless of class or status.
Mm, very convenient that the guy that created the thing was like, you should only use my thing.
Right. Now, there was an idea behind that, though. It wasn't just like a profitable...
It could have been a little bit.
On the underside, it could have been like, I'm going to make some money off this.
Yeah.
The idea was to forego all other various means of execution and to, this is kind of weird, and to give people a sense of equality, even those who are condemned, that all are equal under the eyes of God. So, the same blade that will sever the head of a king will also be the very same blade to behead the lowly pauper. So,
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, it's a weird. It is kind of weird. Be like, no. It's fine that you're gonna die. Hey.
Yeah.
It's the same blade that cut Louis' head off.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right.
We washed it first. Don't worry about it. We didn't get an infection or anything.
I don't know if they didn't believe in that back then. In fact, it doesn't matter.
No. They were shitting and pissing in the streets.
I know.
Rats and fleas were getting all over it, giving people. Black plague and
black
shit.
Black doctors were just... No,
what?
Black plague doctor? Doctors. Black plague doctors.
Yeah, black people
don't
didn't
take
have
that
jobs. Black
context.
People did not have jobs then.
Yeah, no.
Technically, they had nothing but jobs. They just didn't get paid for it.
You know what? I just heard a thing about piracy. That was a legit job.
That is true.
There were a lot of black pirates.
Yeah.
So, construction of the guillotine began. The design that we have all come to know was the result of a group effort. Antoine Louis, the king's physician. You know, I can say the French name's fine. I just realized I got no problem saying the French names.
You just cut in there before I could even say anything. You were like, actually, why don't you shut the fuck up?
Yeah. I knew what you were gonna say, and yes, I cannot pronounce the common American words.
Yeah.
But Antoine Louis,
the
king's physician.
Easy.
Headed the committee, a man by the name of Lecointe, an officer of the Strasbourg Criminal Court, came up with the basic design, and with the help of Tobias Schmidt, a German harpsichord maker.
What is that?
Just
you got glitter everywhere when you said that.
I did, yeah. I just think it's funny. All these guys are working on this very serious project, to solve the problem of capital punishment.
And one of them is just like,
playing his fucking harpsichord, and they're like, Tobias, what you doing? I'm just making harpsichords, you know?
Fwang!
Yeah.
That was me doing a Pete Townsend.
I saw that,
windmill with a harpsichord.
A German harpsichord windmill, yes.
Yeah.
So Tobias Schmidt helped them construct a prototype. And in an odd twist, the king himself, Louis XVI, provided additional insight into the construction, which is ironic, considering that just a few years later, King Louis himself would lose his head to the very guillotine that he helped design and promote.
Also fitting that someone of power was like, no, 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 you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. I got an idea for you.
Yeah.
Should put the blade at an angle.
Yeah. That was his idea.
Yeah.
I hope you insert a sad trombone music. Yeah. Wah, 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 wah. Within its implementation, it became very clear and abundant that the guillotine was an extremely efficient means of execution. It did exactly what it was designed to do. Quick, clean cuts. Within a fraction of a second, a head would be cleanly removed from the body. And therein lies the eternal question. When a human head is instantly separated and there is no trauma to the brain, can that person's head still be conscious of its current surroundings and unfortunate predicament?
I guess that's the question to ask. My question was, how many people are we killing here? Why do we need the... we just got a fucking line around the block? We're just cutting...
Well, you know, it's funny.
Dicing and chopping, 24 by 7?
This is not related. Well, this is not... I'll just add this to the episode. So when I was researching this, one of the things that popped up was an event in France called the September Massacres.
Okay, sure.
It was a span of, I believe, 4 days where people went fucking buck wild and executed 1,000 people.
Wow.
Actually, wow. They estimate between 1,100 to 1,600. They're not sure.
Okay. They were just like, we just want to give this thing a stress test. Just kind of see what it can do. Let that baby hum.
So my point is, they were using the guillotine.
Yeah.
A lot. And that's just 4 fucking days. There was a lot going on in the French Revolution.
That would kind of be like the Bonnaroo of execution.
Like Coachella?
Because it's a form of entertainment too, right? No, it's a show.
It was a public spectacle. Yeah, people...
It's the Coachella of execution.
Oh my god.
And people are camping out.
You know, there was just like jesters, just like dancing like fucking idiots. Oh, there's fucking
jesters, and they're like blowing shit in your face, and you're like, come on, man.
You know, there were bands playing too, music.
Oh, yeah. Lutes.
There were fucking vendors.
Fucking assholes with lutes.
Oh, God. This is the Coachella of its time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Killchella.
Killchella.
I just came up with that.
Oh, my God.
God damn it. I fucking got it.
Yeah. I'm laughing, but I'm also just disappointed. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
But it begs the question. It's something it begs in my mind. I thought about this.
You think about it.
I do.
A lot.
Is a person conscious after the head pops off?
It'd be like for a second.
Well, let's get into it.
What are you going to do with that second?
I don't know. I mean, if you have mental capacity, you're probably thinking, oh, shit.
I mean, I think you're thinking, oh, shit.
Or, as I said for the title of this episode, what am I doing in this bucket?
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's get into some historical accounts, and then you can decide, I can decide, and the people can decide.
Okay.
Is this possible?
Yes.
In 1536, long before the guillotine was employed, Queen Anne Boleyn was charged with adultery, incest, and treason. Most likely all...
Did you say Anne Boleyn? Or Anne Boleyn?
It's two names. Anne
Boleyn?
Boleyn. Thank you.
Sorry. Sorry. It was your Midwesterness.
Yeah.
You know Anne?
You know, I know Anne Boleyn.
You talking about Anne Boleyn?
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry.
No, it's all right.
Sorry.
All those charges, most likely false. False charges trumped up by her fat king husband to get rid of her so he can go around and fuck some other ladies.
Yeah.
Now, Queen Anne was found guilty and sentenced to death by being burned alive. However, it was instead decided that she would be beheaded. And rather than suffer the crushing blow of a dull axe meant for a lowly peasant, an expert swordsman was brought in to perform the act as quickly as possible.
Like a samurai?
Yeah, seriously. They wanted her. They didn't want her to suffer. And quick it was. With one swift stroke of a razor-sharp sword, the swordsman severed her head. And as soon as it fell to the ground, he grabbed it, lifted the head for all to see, and what, pray tell, did the massive crowd see before their very eyes? Well, for a few seconds, as the swordsman held her head high, Queen Anne's lips were moving as though she were trying to speak, and after a few seconds, her face went slack and lifeless.
It's pretty fucking metal.
The interesting thing, as I mentioned, this was a public spectacle. It wasn't just peasants that were viewing this. There were royalty. There were official constables, kings and courts.
Sure.
They were all there watching this.
It was like the Kentucky Derby of its
day. Yeah, it was the Kentucky Derby. Yeah. So the point is, there were a lot of people that witnessed something.
Yeah.
So let's go to a second. Let's do the next one. I'm bumping right along.
Knocking out all these hood rats, man.
Yep. Okay. On the 13th of July, 1793, Charlotte Corday stopped at the Parisian home of Jean-Paul Marat.
Ooh.
Marat was a well-known political figure, theorist, and a scientist. And Corday, also a well-known figure of the French Revolution, secretly held contempt and blame for Marat, believing that he was the cause of an event called the September Massacres, which I mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Where 1,100 people were brutally murdered in the span of 4 days. She entered his home under the guise that she had secret info to share with Marat regarding an upcoming uprising. Marat, at the time, was suffering from a debilitating skin condition, so he conducted all of his work and business from the warm waters of his bathtub.
Oh.
I actually thought of you about during that.
Sometimes I eat ice cream in there.
I know.
Good time.
Yeah.
I don't see any problem with it.
Yeah. Well, while Marat was listening to Corday and writing the names of supposed miscreants, Corday pulled out a large knife and plunged it into his chest. Mm. Marat screamed out, "It's moi! It's moi! Yeah. Mon chéri ami!" And died. Hearing his death scream, others within his house rushed into the room and apprehended Corday, who was quickly found guilty and sentenced to death. On the day of her execution, Corday wore a red blouse, indicative of her status as a traitor, and walked to the guillotine with a calm demeanor. The execution was, of course, quick. The blade severed her head, and immediately after her decapitation, the executioner grabbed her head from the basket, held it high for all to see, and as a means to insult the dead, slapped her cheek. And to the shock and amazement of those in attendance, Corday supposedly opened her eyes, looked in the direction of the slap, and formed a disgusted look upon her face. The executioner slapped the other cheek. Both cheeks. And again, she looked in the direction of the slap, forming a disgusted look upon her face.
I was just thinking Slippity Slap, Spring Hill Jack, and away I go. That's all I was thinking. Yeah.
After a few seconds, like the previous case that I mentioned, her face went limp and her eyes glazed over. Now, regarding the event, though, one spectator wrote, and I quote, "The eyes seemed to retain speculation for a moment or two, and there was a look in the ghastly stare which implied that the head was aware of its ignominious situation."
Oh.
End quote.
Huh.
Now,
that's fucked up.
It is fucked up. It's kind of, yeah. I mean, I also think it's fucked up that this was like, it was like Coachella, man. People were just like, let's go to the public beheading.
Popcorn.
Fuck, man. Now,
everybody's high-fiving each other?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
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 Man, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah, because in their minds, they're executing a dictator, or not a dictator, a traitor. Now, of those two stories that I mentioned, while they most definitely were well-attended events witnessed by many, they are essentially...
You think they're selling tickets for these things?
No, I think they're free.
Like premium seating for like the higher ups? You know what? Like box seats?
Probably, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, those box seats are expensive.
Right.
But those stories are unproven because they're simply passed down by sources that aren't credible. Yeah.
Like the Bible.
Yes, thank you. And speaking of which, go listen to last month's episode.
Yeah.
Creeping Death, hashtag right. Blessed, what was it?
Hashtag... To bless creeping death.
Thank you, yeah. But what if I were to tell you, Brian?
Yes?
What if I were to tell you that a recent beheading...
Oh.
...was attended by a doctor...
Recent.
Yes. Mm. ...who sought to understand the scientific after effects of a decapitation.
Oh.
Well, that is exactly what Dr. Gabriel Barriot did.
Nailed it. First try.
Yeah, that one was kind of hard. Mario did.
Yeah.
And this one took place in 1905, so...
When you say recent, you're fucking lying to me.
No. Recent in the grand scheme of history.
Of time?
Yes!
I guess.
Yes. And of medical knowledge. The medical knowledge in 1905 was far more advanced than the medical knowledge of the 1700s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
At that point, we had penicillin. We knew about infections. We knew about blood pressure. We knew about brains. We knew about heart circuit. We knew all of that.
It is kind of weird when you think about time like that, you know? Like, because my dad was born in the 40s.
Yeah.
Which means his parents would have been around at this time.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that would be my great grandparents were.
Yeah, that would be my grandparents.
Yeah, so
my dad.
Yeah, so it's not. So it is contemporary in the scheme of history.
All right, fuck you.
Yeah, thank you. 1905, Dr. Boriot attended the execution of a convicted murderer by the name of Henri Languille.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah. As soon as Henry's head was severed by the guillotine, Dr. Boriot took note of what he saw. And I will now read his words. And it's quite a long passage, but this is what he wrote. The doctor.
Boriot's notes.
Yes. And I'm just going to read it just as is. No funny words.
No funny business.
No funny business. He said, quote, "The eyelids and lips of the guillotine man worked in irregularly rhythmic contractions for about 5 or 6 seconds. After several seconds, the spasmodic movements ceased. It was then that I called in a strong, sharp voice, 'Languille!' I saw the eyelids slowly lift up without any spasmodic contractions. I insist advisedly on this peculiarity, but with an even movement, quite distinct and normal, such as happens in everyday life with people awakened or torn from their thoughts," end quote.
Hmm.
Now get this, it doesn't end there. Dr. B, why not?
I don't know, you just casually changed it up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dr. B.
Tell me, Dr. B.
Dr. B called out Henry's name again. Languille! And upon that second time, he said, wrote in his notes, quote, "Eyelids lifted and undeniably living eyes fixed themselves on mine with perhaps even more penetration than the first time," end quote. Dr. B called his name a third time, but at that point the face went lifeless and limp and there was no response.
Hmm.
According to Dr. B's final conclusion, he believed that a severed head can retain consciousness for up to 25 to 30 seconds.
Okay.
So there you have it, folks.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah, but isn't that the thing people say is like the common idea of your life flashing before your eyes? Before you die is not actually your life flashing before your eyes. It's your brain firing all these synapses because it doesn't know what it's like to die.
Boop, boop. Got that written.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like that's kind of what we're looking at.
Well, I will say this. No way. There you have it.
No way.
No way. We solved it. You and I, buddy. Three chilling tales of historical decapitation, one observed by a doctor. He saw it. He recorded it. We did it. You and I, Brian. We solved this.
Well,
we solved it.
He did a lot of the heavy lifting.
But I'm putting it out there.
Yeah.
I am putting it out there.
I think you did more than me. More than you, and you did more than me. So you're really kind of
I'll take his credit.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's dead.
I was just going to say, he's dead.
He ain't going to do shit.
No. No, I'll get into the final wave, is what it's called, of electrical stimulation in the brain. But I will point out regarding Dr. Boriot, and I read more on it, is that when he called Languille's name out, you know, the eyelids lifted up.
Yeah.
And the eyes looked at him, like the eyes turned.
Yeah.
To look in the direction, which would indicate not just random firing of brain activity.
Synapses. Yeah, yeah.
But an actual thought process of what to do.
Yeah.
Which would imply consciousness of some degree.
Yes, but I would also assume the look of like confusion would be some of that latter part.
Could be. I don't know. As someone who has
accidentally cleaved into their leg with a blade, I can say that despite how painful you would think it is, you actually don't feel anything.
No, I talk about this later. How many times have you cut yourself with an X-Acto blade and not realized it? With a sharp blade.
A couple.
Yeah.
Not as much.
There's been a few times I've gone over my finger. I didn't even know it, didn't realize
it. But I accidentally cut into my shin with a machete once.
Sure. So. Yeah.
That was very sharp.
There are times, and sometimes when something is a very sharp cut,
yeah.
It doesn't bleed right away.
Right. Yeah.
It takes a few seconds. Yeah. Like, yeah, I've cut my finger and like didn't realize it. And then I'm like, wait, did I? And then I look down. I'm like, oh, fuck, I cut my finger. And I can clearly see the skin's open. And I'm like, huh. And the blood will start pouring out.
Yeah.
I guess my next question is, and you've already kind of talked about, what do you think about all this?
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible? Do you think that there is a possibility for consciousness after a head is cleanly severed with no...
I mean, it sounds like there is,
Yeah.
But I mean, like, what is that body, what is that brain, what is that person going to do with that information?
I don't know. I think it's just fascinating.
I think if you are conscious for those 25, 30 seconds, that time is pretty much spent with slight confusion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like when you go into a room and you don't remember why you went in there.
Sure.
You know, like that's probably kind of what that is. Because maybe you're trying to move limbs.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Right.
You're not the right height you should be because someone's holding a head or you're in a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's mostly confusion paired with what'd you call that? The final wave?
Final wave. Yeah. That sounds
German. That sounds very German.
The final wave?
Yeah, it sounds.
I believe the final wave they're opening for is this band called Das Immer zu Toll.
Oh.
Yeah. Ever so cool. They are a great electro band.
Yeah.
And then they're going to join up with Einstürzende Neubauten on a good tour. Yeah.
Und Kraftwerk?
Oh, Kraftwerk's going to be there. Yeah. You know, we have robots.
We have robots. Automatons.
Yeah. You know, as for me, I do think it's possible. Not in every case, though.
Sure.
I think that there are conditions, and I think the conditions have to be right. I think
I think with a guillotine, you're getting a clean cut.
Right.
Which kind of stops blood flow for a second. Because if it was just like chop, chop, that's like artery, artery, artery.
Yeah.
And that's giving your body.
That's why I mentioned the X-Acto blade. Like,
yeah.
And it's also kind of why I, even though Mansfield did not get decapitated, there was massive head trauma.
Yeah.
In the case of the guillotine, there is no head trauma. Right. There is no brain trauma. And that's where the consciousness is.
Yeah.
So there's no brain trauma. As we mentioned, I think the cut has to be clean and precise, and it has to be instantaneous.
Yeah.
It takes a second for the person to even realize, oh, right. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that I think is a contributing factor to this idea of consciousness after decapitation is the demeanor of the individual. In all the cases that I've read this past week, all these people were calm prior, like Corday.
Yeah.
She wasn't anxious. She wasn't scared.
Right.
She was like, all right. She was just calm about it.
She's like, I've seen 1,000 of these.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mention that because some people will die instantaneously of shock, anxiety, or heart attack.
Right.
In the examples that I mentioned, these people weren't freaking out. They were just like, get it over with or whatever. They were fine.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that is a contributing factor.
And then they shit and piss themselves.
We actually, I don't know. I mean, yes, that does happen, but they usually, in the case of that YouTube video, and you can see how it's done, they have a coffin ready. They just push the body right into the coffin.
Fuck you.
Ooh, yep. And you're done.
Huh.
Now, in conclusion, for the longest time, science has said that consciousness, even for just a few seconds after a decapitation, was most likely improbable. Not impossible, but improbable. I should say, take note of the terminology being used, because that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
The belief was held because upon instant decapitation that there is a sudden loss of blood pressure within the head, and that would lead to an instant coma. So they said, improbable.
Gotcha.
However, there have been a lot of weird recent studies on the university level.
Oh.
Regarding this topic of consciousness.
Okay.
I know. Yeah. Hey, science, man.
Yeah.
Even after the human heart stops, the brain, it turns out, is still very active. Minutes after a heart stops and you are declared dead and the heart isn't beating and there is no more blood flow providing oxygen to the brain, there is a weird phenomenon that is called the final wave.
Yes.
And it is electrical activity that sweeps over the entire brain. It's kind of funny. They talked about that. A good example was The Walking Dead. I think the second season, or the first season, perhaps.
Yeah.
They go to the CDC, the Center for the Disease Control.
Yeah, I think that's two.
Season two?
Maybe. I don't know. Whatever.
And there's a guy that like mapped out a zombie's brain. Mm. And it's essentially the final wave. The brain starts firing slowly but surely, and this electrical activity expands outward.
Yeah.
And that's what that's how they explain the zombies or the walkers in The Walking Dead.
Interesting.
But that is an actual scientific phenomenon that they call the final wave. Now, the weird thing about that final wave is that in some cases regarding animals, this brain activity, this final wave, has been witnessed up to 48 hours after death.
Wow.
And a recent study at a university has found that decapitated rats had brain activity for up to 15 seconds after the head was quickly removed. And regarding that activity, because they have electrodes and wires attached to the head, this activity was viewed as being consistent with brain activity on a conscious level, not an unconscious level.
Hmm.
Meaning that for up to 15 seconds, these rats knew...
Cognitive.
They were cognitive of what had happened afterwards. So there you have it.
Wow.
We solved it.
Yeah. Well...
See, you and me.
So we did it twice.
We did it twice. I'm we solved it credit. Twice. I want to feel good about myself today.
I don't know. Should we get something printed or?
Yes. Actually, would you like to hear actually kind of a gory case? Now, I didn't write this. I'm just going off memory.
Off the
script.
Off the dome.
I'm going to throw it in because it is. This one's fucked up. This is a horror.
Okay.
I forget the date. I think it was like 1895.
A date that will live in infamy. Mm-hmm.
It was a prisoner murderer. Not guillotined, scheduled to be hung.
Yes.
Now, there is a science behind hanging.
And it's
called the drop.
Yeah.
You have to calculate the weight.
The knot is supposed to hit your head, which breaks your neck.
Breaks your neck.
Yes.
The drop has to be how far you fall.
Yeah.
They calculate that based on your weight and all of that. If the drop isn't... if the drop is too short, your neck won't break and you're just going to suffer.
Yeah.
If the drop is too long, you fall too fast, then you risk your head popping off.
Yeah.
And that is what happened to this one prisoner.
Oh.
Now, yeah, so this guy was scheduled to be hung. They did not calculate the drop right. They pulled the lever, he fell, and instantaneously his head popped right off.
Yeah.
Now, his body then fell to the ground.
Ooh, like a whirligig.
No, get this. His body fell to the ground. His hands were tied behind his back.
Yeah.
The body fell in such a perfect fashion that it stopped and stood.
Like upright.
Upright. Yeah. In front of everybody. Public execution.
I mean, that's what you're wanting.
Right. The body stopped. It was standing upright and blood was spewing from the neck wound.
Kurosawa style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said for a couple seconds, it just perfectly balanced and then just slowly fell backwards.
Oh, yeah. That's like that video of that dude that I saw shot himself in the chest.
And then the head rolled off to the side. A doctor was there.
Yeah.
Grabbed the head. I know. Everybody's just grabbing fucking heads.
No, I just imagine that the doctor went over and like checked his pulse and was like, he's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead, guys.
No, they checked the head. Actually, they checked the head and the body.
Yeah.
They said that, the head, the face was twitching and moving.
Oh, yeah.
And that the body kept pumping blood for a few seconds as if the heart were still beating.
I mean, it probably was.
Well, the heart receives electrical stimulation from the brain, so I'm guessing muscle memory, perhaps? I don't know.
Or actually muscles convulsing?
Yeah.
And that's what's causing it?
That was one of the freakiest things. I mean, that's a horror movie.
Yeah.
Just the body perfectly balanced, standing upright, no head, hands behind the back, just Kurosawa, just blood,
Wow.
So that's a fun one.
That is a fun one.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Why don't we do these anymore?
I don't know.
Do these public executions.
Now, we're going to close it out here real brief. I got one last thing to say.
Oh, yeah.
There are a few reasons why I decided upon this topic. as mentioned, the human body is fascinating and mysterious. In a weird way, I've had this conversation with someone who was very opposed to this idea. Somebody has said that it is impossible that a person can have any amount of consciousness in the case of a guillotine. They die instantly.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, I don't think so.
What a weird stance to take about anything.
I was like, even for a second, there's probably something, maybe, you know? And even if you're just conscious for 1 second, that's a very long second.
Yeah.
You know?
Very confusing second.
Exactly. Now, the whole time I was writing this script, I kept thinking of one particular case of decapitation in history that is actually very recent, very tragic, and one that I don't know if a lot of people are aware of. And it involves famous director John Landis, the very man who brought us one of the greatest horror films of all time, American Werewolf in London. Now, you and I, Brian, we have talked about this. And in past episodes, anytime Landis was passingly mentioned, I would throw out a quick jab at his expense by saying, heads are going to roll.
Yeah.
If there was ever a time to talk about what Landis did, it would be now. So, Brian,
yeah,
I am going to give you the microphone because I believe you have written a little something for us today.
I said it way back on episode 75 of this podcast, The Electric Monster, when Hazard and myself discussed an American Werewolf in London, that John Landis is by far the nicest manslaughterer I've ever met. Have I met many? Who knows?
Who knows? Right.
I hope
you
not.
Don't know. Yeah.
But he is, you know, a schmoozer and a kiss ass who happens to know some creative and marginally more creative people than him.
Sure.
Most narcissists have the decency of a false face, but John's became apparent around 1986 when he went on trial for a severe accident on the set of the Spielberg produced 1983 Twilight Zone, the movie. Landis fancied himself a comedy auteur of the new Hollywood era. You know, your Scorsese's, your De Palma's.
He did Blues Brothers, right?
He did do Blues Brothers. Okay. A time I genuinely romanticize and long for, but as always, ultimate control and power leads to corrupt, ultimately. Quick profile on Landis. He was at the helm of some massive comedies, Animal House, Blues Brothers, the aforementioned American Werewolf, and Trading Places, to name a few. He had some huge success, but here's my question to you. Comedy is driven by writing, talent, and ultimately editing. How many comedy directors are there, really? It's like Judd Apatow and Charlie Chaplin. Yeah. And that's about it.
Okay.
Buster Keaton, you know, the silent stars. But like, I guess what I'm saying is Landis wasn't as hot as he thought he was.
That's weird. Really?
Yeah, right?
He didn't think he was hot because the dude did American Werewolf in
London. That's what I'm saying. He wasn't as hot as he thought he was. He thought he was the hottest shit in town.
Oh, okay.
Because
he
did Animal House.
Sure, okay, I got you now.
Not necessarily because of American Werewolf. I mean, the poster for American Werewolf even says another kind of animal.
Sure.
By the director of Animal House. He surrounded himself with top talent and flagrantly abused his power the moment he achieved his blank check privilege. Twilight Zone the movie was an anthology film consisting of 4 short stories and a wraparound. Pretty traditional setup for a genre story like this. Film itself, devoid of the controversy. It's fine.
It's a fun film.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And it's got some serious talent behind it. Not just Landis, who directed the wraparound in the first story. But the wraparound is, to cut through the chaff, Dan Aykroyd being a weirdo and turning into a monster and eating Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
That's basically the story.
It's always fun to see Dan Aykroyd in something.
Yeah. We are from France. Only to reappear at the end of the film in an ambulance. We can just spoil the movie.
It's fine. It's been
it's 40 years old
year.
and this dude killed some people during it. So fuck it. We can spoil anything. Story one we'll circle back to because that's the crux of the tragedy. The second story is Kick the Can, directed by Steven Spielberg. If it was a song, it'd be written by Paul McCartney as some whimsical fucking bullshit about your grandma growing old.
Bullshit. Get on the fucking roof.
I did that for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's fine. It's pretty weak, but, you know, no one died, so it gets a pass. Yeah. Story three is It's a Good Life, the second best in the film, directed by famous French filmmaker Joe Dante.
Oh, our good buddy Joe Dante.
Our good friend Joe Dante.
Yeah, I love Joe Dante.
It's about this little mutant shit kid named Anthony who's got his... this, like, powers that he can manifest things, but deep down he just wants a family that loves him.
Who doesn't?
It's genuinely creepy, and parts of the cartoon-inspired effects pretty solid.
The effects are awesome.
Yeah.
Side note.
Yeah.
Did Rob Bottin do the effects for that one?
I do believe so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Story 3 is the one everyone remembers. It's the
terror...
Nightmare at 20,000 Feet,
The retelling of William Shatner's episode.
I think it's better than the source material.
Oh, it's awesome.
And the Shatner thing's, like, that's
Shatner's
a good episode.
Good.
But I think this is even better.
Yeah.
Lithgow is, like, on another level, and George Miller directed it of
Mad Max fame. Yeah, cool.
Just really good job of conveying, you know, the panic and the claustrophobia.
The gremlin looks.
The gremlin? Yeah, really creepy. And once again, the effects work is, like, really convincing, and it's a shame that this story is forever attached to the cancer that is John Landis and the atrocities on this set.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I feel that this hadn't been, you know, such a colossal clusterfuck that it was, we could have had a really good run of Twilight Zone movies. But alas, John had to let his ego get in the fucking way.
How'd he do that?
Well, John wanted authenticity in his story about a bigot transported to various historically racially charged times. The bigot in question was Bill Connor, played by, wonderfully, by Vic Morrow. Bill's unlikable naturally, as a bigot is. He's loud, spouting off slurs about Jews, blacks, and Asians in a bar after getting passed over for a promotion at work. When exiting the bar, he's transported through time into these lives, respectively. He finds himself on a cobblestone street in Nazi-occupied France, being oppressed by the Germans. Then at the other end of the rope of a KKK lynch mob in, like, rural 50s Alabama. And lastly, the war-torn jungle of Vietnam. Mistakes him as an enemy by American soldiers. Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt here. It's a nice Twilight Zone potential episode, because it's like...
It's an amalgamation of, like, two different stories kind of slammed together.
And it's like,
together.
Oh, this is a nice character arc of redemption.
Yeah, if only the director could be redeemed as well. I can only assume the conditions in the previous story, you know, were as shoddy, you know, being on the other end of a lynch mob and being shot at by Nazis.
Yeah, this whole is just rife with potential work hazards. OSHA would have shut that shit down.
Well, lucky for you, they weren't there.
Yeah.
In the Vietnam sequence, though, you know, because John was such an unprepared, egotistical asshole that not only... was he responsible for this tragedy soon to befall these poor, poor, poor souls? But he could have gotten others killed before this.
Wait, I find it kind of funny, in a bad way, that he wants authenticity on a Twilight Zone episode, which is based on fantasy.
Yes. Apparently, according to stories, when Vic is treading water at the beginning of the jungle sequence, he's shot at by American soldiers.
Sure.
John wanted real bullets to be used on set for authenticity's sake.
Like William Friedkin.
Yes. Yeah, another new Hollywood auteur.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
John wanted to make a big war film since he lucked his way onto his first set in 1970. The classic, Kelly's Heroes. Mm. John Landis was on that as like a PA or something. But the sequence in question that we're talking about today was staged to be the powerful hinge point in the morality tale. Vic was supposed to run to an open battle to save the lives of two Viet Cong children from the crossfire of this massive battle sequence. During rehearsals, the setup was already rocky at best, but John wasn't hearing any of it. When he was, you know, talked to about this, he said, "You haven't seen nothing yet." And boy, did he not know that statement was gonna be
fuck off, just fuck right off.
So, fueled by his ego, you know, as a rule of thumb, though, I recommend, you know, maybe listening to people who know more than you about things that you don't know, and maybe ask some questions about them too.
Okay.
But John Landis did not do this.
No.
He also wanted the scene to be done at night with close-ups. Children can't film at night due to union and labor
laws, man.
So John had this great idea to hire these children illegally.
What?
Against the union, against SAG, and against labor laws. He found two Thai children. I'm going to butcher these names here. Micah Din Lee and Renee Shin Yi Chi, without any proper paperwork, all under the table. In the scene, Vic runs in to save the children, grabs them, and while running through waist-high water, a helicopter passes low over them. The pyro was, like, overclocked to get a massive explosion.
Yeah.
This caused the explosion to be too large, that close to a helicopter. That's only 24 feet off the ground. Didn't know it was that low.
Yeah, that's not very high.
That's two basketball.
Yeah. I could be wrong. I don't mean to interrupt. I've read that the pilot that they hired was a Vietnam pilot.
Yes.
But he was not trained for movie. Like,
no,
not
this
to
was
work
his
on a
first
film.
Kind of big gig. Yeah. And he didn't want to rock the boat because he was like, John Landis is a big deal. And
sure.
This is my first job. This could lead to something really amazing.
Listen, we've talked about bad dads.
Yes.
My dad was in Vietnam. And hey, anybody who's been in Vietnam, they've seen some shit.
Yeah, it doesn't help to also be like, we're remaking Vietnam.
Right.
You want to go do it?
And there's going to be real explosions.
Yes.
And real gunfire.
Yes.
Hope this doesn't set off your PTSD.
This was resulting in a nervous, anxious pilot who was also dealing with some serious PTSD from his time in the service to get rocked off balance and the blades to dip. Now, I'm not blaming the pilot for this.
No.
I want to make it clear. Dorsey Wingo, great fucking name.
Yeah, Dorsey?
Yeah, that's his name. His name's Dorsey Wingo.
That guy's got a lot of pats.
He does. He was doing a job, and I can only assume didn't know that he was allowed to say no at any time during this. Keep in mind, John Landis is using live ammunition. Like, you're going to go talk to that guy and be like, I don't feel comfortable with this. Gack, gack, gack. Just shooting in the fucking air like an asshole. he's fucking crazy. The pyro simulated the effects of war, maybe a little too closely.
Sure.
And when the blades dipped, it instantly killed the three in the water. Moro was decapitated, and one of the children was cut in half. The other was crushed by the helicopter.
I was under the assumption that all.
Yeah, I think it did like
at an angle.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, pretty bad. Vic didn't know it at the time, but life and art were kind of crossing at that moment.
Sure.
He was trying to save these three children. And with a smoldering wreckage atop three dead bodies, the only thing John could immediately say was, that's a wrap. Piece of shit. John Landis, in all of his narcissism, had the audacity to appear at the funeral of all three deceased and give speeches. At Morrow's funeral, he said, film is forever and Vic will live on. Through some savvy attorney, somehow Landis was acquitted of manslaughter, and all parties attached to the project distanced themselves from it and Landis. He slowly kind of faded into relative obscurity after alienating all of his friends, namely the hugely popular Eddie Murphy. After the event, Murphy hired Landis for Coming to America, and Landis, whose head was so far up his ass for far too long, couldn't see the opportunity for redemption right in front of him. He big-dicked around set, telling Eddie he was the only one who had the balls to be able to tell Michael Jackson on the set of Thriller, you know, nobody tells you fuck you, Michael. I'll tell you fuck you. Fuck you, Michael.
Who the fuck is this guy?
And he did this to Eddie on the set of Coming to America.
Jesus Christ.
The craziest part of all of this is something I learned during this research, though.
Okay.
That I hadn't heard in a podcast or seen on... because I listened to Behind the Bastards and I watched Curse Films on Shudder. None of this was brought up, though. The only part filmed before the accident was the Dan Aykroyd sequence.
Mm.
At the beginning.
Oh.
So then they did this Landis part, and then they were like, here you go, Steve. Go direct yours now. Like, there wasn't a moment after... because you probably didn't spend that much money, right? Like, three fucking people died. Why not just shut down the whole thing and just nix it?
Yeah, I don't know how much Landis was invested in this, you know? Because sometimes the director can also be the producer, blah, blah,
oh, he
blah,
was.
Blah. He was? Okay.
Yeah, he and Spielberg were.
I'm just guessing Landis probably didn't want to lose out money.
He probably didn't. I think it was like $10 million budget. Made 40.
I mean, also, I don't think he cared at all about Vic Morrow or the two kids.
No, absolutely not. No, he tried to save face by going to their, you know, funerals and pretty much making it all about himself.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine that? That is the last guy you want to see. The guy responsible.
Right.
Walking around free at your funeral and then getting up at the podium and delivering a speech in front of all the friends and family. Like, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's just...
Nice guy. Love him. He was fun.
Oh, you know, here's the thing, like, regarding, like, movies, there's always been accidents on movies.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
I think Christopher Nolan's had two deaths.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Brandon Lee's The Crow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Stunt person died. Dark Knight Rises, I think, is stunt person. Just any every Batman that Chris Nolan touches, a person dies.
But usually when there is an accident or a death, there is remorse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everything that I have read and seen about John Landis regarding this incident, I have seen zero.
Oh, looking
remorse.
At the court footage is just like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah. I've seen nothing from this guy indicating that he is sorry for what happened. I think he was more annoyed that people were killed because it interrupted the making of his film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's an egomaniac and a narcissist. And I mean, luckily he's like, he doesn't make movies anymore.
Yeah.
He's kind of faded into obscurity.
Yeah, good.
His son's a shitbag that got kicked out of Hollywood as well. So like, that's a plus.
Here's the thing that I'll say about Landis. And the reason I wanted to include it is because it included a decapitation.
It did.
That was caught on film.
And changed, like, child labor and union and working laws within film as well.
That's why
I threw in the Mansfield bar.
That's why I threw in that line about tragedy leads to innovation within safety.
Yeah.
Because it is sadly true that's what takes. Like, don't get me wrong, I love American Werewolf in London, one of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah.
I will keep watching it, but
anytime
anybody mentions Landis, I will then say, oh, yeah, the guy that killed three people?
Known manslaughterer?
Yeah, known manslaughterer. literally got away with murder.
When I met him, he was doing autographs at a horror convention. And they annexed him, put him in his own room, and they were screening the line for anything Twilight Zone.
Of course.
Because they didn't... I don't think it was necessarily he said, like, I'm not going to sign any of that shit. I think the promoters were just like, we don't even want to breach the subject. Like, we don't even want to allow that topic to even be talked about.
I don't know, man.
Which, like, I mean, I kind of feel bad because there was a dude that actually had an original Twilight Zone, the movie poster that had a bunch of people signed on it. And I was like, you're never going to get Landis on that.
Honestly, you know, even if I had that poster, I don't think I'd want Landis on that.
Yeah,
that.
Right?
I wouldn't want anything from him.
I don't know. I kind of feel the same way about Landis that I do Polanski.
Sure.
In a way. I mean, Polanski didn't kill anybody, which is... makes him a little bit less of a monster, but like, I can watch the stuff before the tragedy, you know.
Well, that's that classic conundrum separating art from the artist,
right?
You know,
right?
And sometimes, well, fuck, I hate to bring up his name, fucking Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
A lot of people may not know this. Bill Cosby had a show for kids. I'm not talking about Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. You know,
the cartoon. Yeah, Little Bill.
He had picture pages.
Oh.
Picture pages. Yeah. Lots of fun with picture. I even remember the fucking theme song to it. It was a great kids show. And it's fucking ironic that he did this show about nice thing and morality for kids.
Yeah.
Secretly, he was a rapist douchebag.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
You know, and that show helped so many kids to learn something. Yeah. Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids cartoon was an amazing show, especially for black youths. And now...
And you, who lived in a junkyard.
I lived in a fucking junkyard, yes. So it's like, I could still watch something that Bill Cosby was related to.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to throw it out. Oh, the rapist Bill Cosby.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's how, I mean, that's how I feel about Landis. Man,
Yeah, but, like, I'm not going to watch Beverly Hills Cop 3.
No.
It's not a good movie.
No.
And that was well after the accident.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Thank you for that. The reason I wanted you to talk about it is because it did involve decapitation. And I felt at some point we should talk about John Landis because he is a staple of the horror community. Because, again, did one of the greatest horror films of all time.
Yeah, but also, isn't that weird? Like, he's a staple of the horror community, but he only did one
horror
film.
But it was a game changing film. Actually, we talk about it, I think, in the very first M3 with E5 episode about werewolves.
Yeah, werewolves. Yeah. It was the first Academy Award for special effects.
Yeah. I will say this. It's as tragic as it is, and going back to this whole science of decapitation,
but also,
why even talk
hold
about
on,
it?
Though. Oh, yeah. Because that's also the thing, though, right? Like, that's what I'm saying is, like John Landis isn't the fucking mastermind and the creative. We talk about American Werewolf because of Rick Baker.
Right, Rick Baker.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. But also, the performances are
David
great.
Naughton.
David Naughton's awesome. Is it Jenny Allgutter?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. Goddamn.
How much of that?
Even Yoda is in that film.
That's true.
Oz is on screen.
How much of the heavy lifting was really done by John Landis?
I think the style of the film is unique, and that does come from him and his directorial
powers. Any of those effect
shots,
I think those are mostly Baker.
Yeah. The effects are Baker's, but the overall film, how it plays out, the editing, the script.
The script he wrote when he was like 16 or some shit. Yeah.
I don't think it would have been the film it is if not for him directing it.
No.
But yeah, he's an absolute fucking douchebag who murdered three people.
And got away with it.
I mean, manslaughter and got away with it. Yeah. And I will say this. It's a weird thing to say. I talked about, is there consciousness after a decapitation, and the consensus, I think, is there is if there is no trauma. In the case of Vic Morrow, I would say that guy died. I think they all died instantly.
That's what they say.
And thankfully so.
Even the one that got crushed was an instant death.
Yeah, because that was a very traumatic decapitation.
Oh, I didn't even bring it up. Their parents were just sitting right there, too.
Yeah.
So the parents are sitting there. Smoldering wreckage in front of them, and then John Landis says, that's a wrap,
and there's Vic Morrow's head floating in the water.
Yeah, just a real shitbag.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
Yeah,
and
if you want to know more, I highly recommend listening to that Behind the Bastards two-parter. That thing is really informative, and the Cursed Films episode is real people who were there on set.
Oh yeah, they talk about that time. Okay, yeah, it's fucked up. That is, I'm amazed at that whole episode. Amazed in an awkward way, obviously. Fuck, I can't get over how much of a D-bag that guy is.
Yeah, and I mean that scene was supposed to be the end of that story.
Yeah.
In the film, but hard cuts to him on a train to like Dachau or Auschwitz or something.
Remember.
Yeah.
It's been years since I've seen it.
Yeah. But that's the end of my story.
Actually, that's the end of the episode.
Okay,
I wanted to end it
I'll
with,
see ya.
I wanted to end it with Landis.
Yeah.
I wanted the people to know what he did. I wanted them to figure out for themselves.
Right. I do have a weird like push-pull though, because I do love Joe Dante like a lot. Like,
sure.
He's one of my favorite directors, and he has a website called Trailers from Hell.
Okay.
Where he does like commentary over like old movie trailers.
Yeah.
Basically. But he has guests on, and Landis is on there quite frequently.
Oh.
So like, I assume they're like still buds.
Okay.
And I can only imagine like, what are those conversations, if there ever were, or if it's just a like, yeah, we just don't talk about it.
I'd have to imagine they probably don't talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Landis's ego or just his mentality regarding the whole thing is he probably does not see himself responsible.
Right.
You know, like a narcissist. They're
the victim.
They're the always.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are not the cause.
I mean, in that Cursed Films episode, though, Kane Hodder's on it, and he's like, I can't really point blame at anybody. I mean, that could have been a lot of different factors. And I mean, he's probably not wrong, but if the director is telling the helicopter to go lower, yeah, the helicopter could opt to not go lower.
Sure.
But like, I don't know, if there's an accident at work, it falls on the manager.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. And honestly, regarding that, there's still common sense to use on set. Like,
yeah.
We're going to hire a Vietnam pilot, actual Vietnam pilot, for his first job ever.
Yeah.
And we're going to have him fly at night on a set with real explosions, with real bullets, over water.
Yeah.
So there's mist kicking up everywhere.
Right.
That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, right? I think it was just a giant It was like a culmination of really bad choices.
Sure. But as you pointed out,
who made
Who made those choices?
Landis.
Landis did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was his. It was all on him.
Yeah, it was like miscommunication that all flows up through him and out of his fucking mouth.
And it sounds like, as far as how he worked on set, I don't think anybody told him no. I think people were too afraid to tell him no.
At that point in time, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And there
you I got have, his phone number in the other room.
Yeah, it's true. I know. I have since you told me you have his phone number, yeah. I've often thought we should call John Landis.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably an office. I think it's an office.
We could leave a message.
And I got that. He gave me that business card like 2 decades ago.
Sure.
Almost.
So yeah, it's probably changed. But
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hope. Did you enjoy this episode?
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, it was fun. I like it. It's the history of the
I learned more about the guillotine than I did beheadings, and you know what? I'm in for that.
I liked it too. It's good to know that a good German harpsichord maker named Tobias Schmidt helped to make the guillotine.
Yeah, it makes sense that a German did it.
You know. Also, I learned a little bit about French history and Jean-Paul Marat and Charlotte Corday.
You know?
The September massacres.
Yeah, that was interesting. That's crazy.
I know. My
Coachella
favorite,
of killing.
The Coachella of killing, yes. My favorite, though, if you can say I had a favorite about decapitation, was the written account of an actual doctor.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's kind of like how science works, is you have to observe something. You have to repeat the experiment multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, he's not going to be able to repeat that experiment multiple times. But he did shout out the name.
He didn't have the tenacity. No, if he wanted to repeat it, he could.
There's ways, of course. Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. You know, he shouted the name multiple times to see, is this reaction going to be
response.
The same?
Yeah.
And 2 out of 3. How's that Meatloaf song? Meatloaf?
Yep.
Meatloaf. How's that Meatloaf song go?
Let me talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 out of 3.
You think about it.
Yeah, you think about it. But thank you. hey, audience. Hey. Are you listening? Good. Thank you for joining this episode of Mystery Monsters and Mayhem.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to the audience.
Sure.
I want them to know that I care, and I'm glad. Hey, I'm glad you're listening.
Yeah.
You there. Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy. Mariah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I bet Sean's listening.
Sean? Yeah, Sean listens. Yeah. Sean. Laura.
Yeah.
That's a kiss to you. Whoop, whoop.
God damn it. That spiked the levels.
Yeah, thank you. Kenzie's out there listening.
Yeah.
No Malort in this episode.
Never.
Thank fucking God.
Yeah, yeah.
Kaylee.
We're not monsters.
Thank you. No, we're not fucking monsters. Kaylee, throw out a yub nub to you.
Who are you pointing at?
I'm pointing at the people who are listening.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just thankful.
You're treating this like it's like your series finale.
It is.
You're just like doing you're doing like a walk-off.
I'm going to walk. I'm going to walk into the bedroom and play some wicked guitar. I'm going to do some fucking shredding, man. I'm going to fucking shred.
Or walk around the neighborhood and have the neighborhood kids yell at you.
Probably will do that. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
But yeah, thanks for joining me and Brian
on this
episode about decapitations, the history of the guillotine, and... the unfortunate truth about John Landis.
Yeah.
Absolute D-bag.
Yeah, but nobody really knows who he is anymore.
Yeah, it's all right,
these
though.
These days. It's just us old
old horror fans and fans of the Blues Brothers. But people should know. They should know, because he should not get away with that.
There was they had cocaine in the budget for Blues Brothers.
They did. I knew that.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher was there.
There was a lot of cocaine.
A lot of cocaine. So much cocaine.
So, got anything going on? Because I know you do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm going to Raleigh Saturday?
This coming weekend.
Yeah, for the World Oddities Expo.
Yeah, so anybody out in Raleigh?
Yeah.
Go see this guy.
Do you know people that listen in Raleigh?
I don't know if anybody is.
I don't think I do.
Shout out and give us a shout in the comments. Yeah, I'm from Raleigh.
Yeah, drop a yub dub. Drop in the
exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's cool. I'm glad you're doing a show. And I hope you sell a lot of artwork and prints.
Me too, because I got bills.
Yeah, we all got bills, man.
Yeah.
It's a way of life. I don't have anything.
Okay.
No, I'm not doing anything.
I mean, you got like your ready-made sales.
Yeah, I'm just making stuff and shipping stuff.
You just don't even promote these things anymore. You're just like, oh shit, it's 7 o'clock. I guess I'm putting things up now. Sorry you missed them.
I'm going to try to promote more stuff. I'm just trying to catch up on orders.
Gotcha.
But thank you for joining this episode of Mystery Monsters and Mayhem. Until next time.
Sure.
Choose. Oh, also, if anybody's listening to this, chime in on the Instagram, leave us a message or a comment. Do you think that there is consciousness?
Oh.
After
your head is cut off.
After your head is cut off. Yay or nay? Let us know.
All right.
All right.
Yeah.
With that being said, tschüss. Auf Wiedersehen und bis später. And I'll see you later.